Robert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mueller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program. Who was the greatest historical figure of the 20th century? I want you to keep that question in mind because that's going to be our focus for the major portion of the program today. And the catalyst for this, the historical occasion, is that today is the 80th birthday of Baroness Margaret Thatcher. That's right. Britain's Iron Lady turns 80 today. And I'll just tell you right up front, she, I believe, is one of the great heroes of the 20th century. I'm going to tell you why. And you're going to have the opportunity to talk about who, in your opinion, in your historical perspective and evaluation, deserves to be counted among the greatest heroes or heroines of the 20th century. We don't often get to do shows like this, but on the 80th birthday of Margaret Thatcher, it's just fitting to try to take a step back and to have an intelligent conversation about who really made the greatest difference in the 20th century. More on that to come in just a few moments. First of all, CNN is out now with a report that has been circulating in largely international circles until now, and for that reason, I have not discussed it on air. But now that a major U.S. Cable news network is dealing with this, it's time to talk about it. There are credible reports now that doctors in some New Orleans hospitals practiced mercy killings or euthanasia in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. In particular, there are credible reports about what have been styled or called mercy killings at New Orleans Memorial Medical Center. And some of you may have seen the report on CNN. There is still not enough there to know exactly what went on, but there are some very ominous signs that something went wrong. In particular, there is the testimony of one physician who said that the issue of quote, putting persons out of their misery had come up in the aftermath of the hurricane and the electricity going off and all the rest. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a reminder to us of how narrow is the boundary between those who say, I would never consider doing such a thing, and then under urgent circumstances they say, I'm going to reevaluate that position. Euthanasia is illegal all across the United States in terms of any active step taken by medical personnel. It is a form of homicide, and in the state of Louisiana, it is by constitution outlawed. And so this is a major issue, and obviously when we're talking about upwards of 45 persons, there were 45 bodies found in three different rooms in Memorial Medical Center in New Orleans. Something's going on, and now is the time to get to the bottom of it. You know, we were talking just earlier this week about euthanasia in Europe, the Netherlands, Belgium. We were looking at what Peter Singer had to say, as he says that the sanctity of human life is an outmoded concept that we will be rid of as we move into the future. And he says that the acceptance of euthanasia, of assisted suicide, that these things will lead to the normalization of killing. And, of course, he says that a human being, well, can be killed if that person is unable to have self-consciousness, to have an aspect of the future, to relate, to communicate, etc. Thus, he, as we talked earlier this week, says that infanticide and the killing of the aged and the seriously disabled and the rest can be moral. Now, there were certainly persons in New Orleans who said just days before the hurricane they would never contemplate such a thing, but now there are credible reports that the practice may have taken place. There's a very weird angle to this, as this doctor, who is the central source on the story, says that hospital administrators and some doctors came into the area where many of the medical personnel were congregated and stood and asked for a time of prayer, even as some of the practitioners had multiple syringes in each hand. Something happened. Those 45 people died, and under very suspicious circumstances, and now is the time to get to the bottom of it and to figure out what this means in terms of medical ethics, not only in New Orleans, but across the United States of America. Ominous reports out of the nation of Venezuela, as President Hugo Chavez of that nation now says he is going to expel a major United States missionary group, this group, the New Tribes Mission, that does outstanding work in reaching some of the most unreached persons on the planet. And at this time, it appears that the New Tribes Mission has upwards of 160 personnel in the country of Venezuela, and some of these are deep in jungle areas, helping to reach persons with the gospel. But now Hugo Chavez, well, you'll remember it was Pat Robertson who called for the assassination of Mr. Chavez sometime back. And even though Pat Robertson apologized for that and withdrew the statement, Hugo Chavez has used that as an opportunity now to turn his hatred towards evangelicals and evangelists and missionaries. In Venezuela, missionary groups have to have a permit or permission. Shortly after the Robertson-Chavez conflict, the Venezuelan president stopped the issuing of all missionary permits, but now he has identified this one group, and he is claiming that their missionary efforts are tantamount to colonialism and imperialism. You know, let's remember that Hugo Chavez has as his best friend, and unashamedly so, Cuban dictator Fidel Castro. They have a similar approach. Both are atheistic, both are communist, both are Marxist, and both want to see Christianity replaced with the vision of ideological Marxism and all that that would represent. This move against the New Tribes Mission will certainly be controversial worldwide already, just as this news story is barely hours old. It can be found on both sides of the Atlantic, and it's creating quite a buzz in missionary circles as well. This is something we as Christians will need to watch closely, but it is a reminder to us that we have many missionaries all over the world who are in danger. And even as we see doors opening in some places, we see windows closing in others. In Texas, it's marriage that's on the line. The state of Texas is considering a constitutional amendment that would ban the approval of same-sex marriage. It's expected to come up in the November election, and the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force is doing its best to oppose it, running advertisements on Texas television stations. It's very interesting as you look at this. It's typical in terms of how this issue has been debated coast to coast. But what makes Texas so very interesting, of course, is that this is the state where George W. Bush was twice elected governor, and it is President Bush who has made a national federal marriage amendment an issue of concern. He raised it in the last two State of the Union addresses. And so the results of this vote in Texas are going to be seen as very important in terms of the nationwide context. And we need to hope that it passes by a wide margin. Data is now out from the United States Census Bureau on marriage and births. And, well, the headline on the New York Times says it all. Data on marriage and births reflect the political divide. The lead of the New York Times story says this: when it comes to marriage and babies, the red states really are different from the blue states. According to a new Census Bureau analysis of marriage, fertility, and socioeconomic considerations and characteristics. Here's the bottom line. People in the Northeast marry later and are more likely to live together without marriage and less likely to become teenage mothers than our people in the South. I want to go on down to a spokesperson for the U.S. Census Bureau who said this: with the trend to later marriage, we were interested to find out if people were living alone longer or living with a partner and then marrying later. We did find that in the states where people marry later, there is a higher proportion of unmarried couple households. So it may be that people join in couples at the same time, but just marry later. I find that very, very interesting because we've been talking about this issue for years. You know that this is one of our big concerns. The delay of marriage, what's happening to young people in terms of this extended adolescence. This particular piece of data from the Census Bureau is very interesting. Indeed, it's fascinating because the analyst is saying, look, these people are coming together as couples just about at the same time, but they are marrying later, especially in northeastern states where this is exaggerated in terms of the data. And by the way, just so you know, it is the District of Columbia where people marry later than anywhere else in the country, and Utah where they marry earlier. Folks, worldview does make a difference. We were talking about this earlier this week in terms of birth rate. The more conservative you are, the more children you are likely to have. In the red states, people marry earlier and have more children. In the blue states, they tend to marry later and have fewer children. We were looking at this in terms of the Jewish divide yesterday with Jack Wertheimer's article published in Commentary when he said that it is the Orthodox Jews who are having the babies, by and large, far higher birth rate, and it is the more liberal Jews who are not. The Jewish pattern seems to be pertaining across the religious divide, and it may be that this is certainly true among Christians as well. The more conservative Christians, they tend to be far more focused on what marriage is, on why marriage is so important in terms of the demonstration of God's glory, and why children are so important and to be welcomed as God's gifts. That isn't to say that liberals don't have babies and don't love their children. It is to say that the matter of relative focus is very much a function of worldview. Eventually, we show by how we live what we really believe. It's not so much that we have to try to live out our worldview. We are going to live out our worldview. The issue is the life we're leading, are the decisions we're making, indicative of a truly Christian worldview? Because in the final analysis, we do what we choose to do, and by our choices, we indicate what we really believe, what are our true priorities. Now, the flip side of this data from the Census Bureau is that the South has a problem with people getting pregnant in their teenage years before they're married. That should be a concern, too. But the answer to all this is the Christian worldview perspective that understands what marriage really is the lifelong commitment between a man and a woman, one of the central tasks of adulthood for the vast majority of Americans, of human beings for that matter, and that understands children as the natural gift to the marital bond. We'll be back to talk about heroes and heroines of the 20th century. I want to know your say. The phone number 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Mohler.
One sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable, that would advance dramatically the cause of freedom and peace. General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Of course, you were hearing the memorable words of President Ronald Reagan from June of 1987 when he stood at the Brandenburg Gate in a divided Berlin and said to the Soviet Union's leader, Mikhail Gorbachev, tear down this wall, open this gate. With my wife and family, I had the opportunity last summer to stand on that very spot and to be reminded of these words and of their impact. Some people would say that Ronald Reagan was one of the great leaders of the 20th century. I want to know what you think. Today is the 80th birthday of Margaret Thatcher. Lady Thatcher enters her ninth decade, and there's a big party in London, and the stature of Baroness Thatcher is indicated by the fact that the Queen of England is going to attend her birthday party. That doesn't happen. The Queen doesn't go to the parties of commoners. But this is no ordinary lady. This is Britain's Iron Lady, and as you know, she led the Conservative Party and served as Britain's Prime Minister. She is herself, I believe, a model of the integrity of leadership. In May of 1979, she moved into number 10 Downing Street and changed the course of British history. She was born on October the 13th, of course, in 1925, in the small village of Grantham in England. She was the daughter of a grocer. She was trained as a chemist and later as a lawyer at Oxford University, and then she was elected to Parliament, and there she stayed, and she worked her way through successive governments, showing her ability and her leadership, and then she really landed on the world scene in 1979. And remember that she became Britain's prime minister even before Ronald Reagan was elected president of the United States. And then we look back and say, what a team they made. One of the portraits hanging in my library shows Margaret Thatcher and President Reagan walking together. And as they walked together, they changed history. I believe that in large part, you can point to the demise of the Soviet Union. And you can say that at least those two great figures had a lot to do with bringing down the communist atrocity in the Soviet Union. But, you know, the 20th century was a long time. And even as we are reflecting on the life and of the legacy of Margaret Thatcher today, we're also looking back at the 20th century and seeing others. Look back to World War I. Look to World War II. You know, in a very real sense, the 20th century is dominated by a figure like Winston Spencer Churchill, another of Britain's prime ministers. He, the man who probably more than any other, had the wisdom to stare down Adolf Hitler and had the courage to summon the resources of the British people and also the political ingenuity to hold the British Empire together against the onslaught of the Nazi regime until America entered the war and America and Great Britain became the great allies of the 20th century. Others may look at military leaders and want to talk about Douglas MacArthur or George S. Patton or Dwight Eisenhower. Others may be looking at other arenas of contributions to our culture. Might be thinking of Martin Luther King Jr. or other presidents or other world figures. Today's your opportunity to say, for all of us, make your argument, make your case. Who do you believe was the great hero or heroine of the 20th century? Christians need to take a step back every once in a while and gain some historical perspective. We need to think about even why we think such thoughts. Why is it we admire such persons? How do we evaluate persons against the canvas of history? And what would be the appropriate standards of judging greatness in terms of heroism in the leadership of our age, the leadership of the world, the leadership of countries, the leadership of nations, of movements, of causes. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The birthday of Margaret Thatcher reminds us, if nothing else, of the fact that individuals really do make a difference in world history. It made all the difference in the world that it was Margaret Thatcher who was at the head of the Conservative Party, the Tories, in 1979 when she was swept into power. I believe it made all the difference in the world that Winston Churchill was the Prime Minister of England as that nation faced its darkest hour. You can look at different moments in world occurrence, different crises of world history, and you can say it was that person who made a decisive difference. And in the 20th century, there were so many. And while we can still remember, and when there are now so many who are alive and can look back, while the GI generation can talk to us about the Pattons and the Churchills and the Eisenhowers, and when the generation of the 60s and the 70s can talk about the leaders of that day, and when there are so many alive who can look back and talk about Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher and those of similar stature in the 20th century, the issue is, who do you think deserves to be known as the great leader of the 20th century? The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Margaret Thatcher was known, if for nothing else, like Winston Churchill, for the power of her words. In 1980, she spoke to the Conservative Party conference and gave her famous line, "The lady's not for turning." Let's hear it.
To those waiting with bated breath for that favorite media catchphrase, the U-turn, I have only one thing to say. U-turn if you want to. The lady's not for turning.
No, and she wasn't either, was she? The lady's not for turning. She didn't turn. She moved others. 10 years later, she was speaking at the Rome Summit, and she was speaking of the Rome Summit in Parliament in the House of Commons. She was going after the Labour Party for its flirtations with a Eurocentric worldview, and she again spared no words. Let's hear her again.
Of course, the president of the Commission, Mr. Delors, said at press conference the other day that he wanted the European Parliament to be the democratic body of the community, he wanted the Commission to be the executive, and he wanted the Council of Ministers to be the Senate. No! No! No!
You know, I think she made her point. And that's what made Margaret Thatcher, among any other things, one of the great leaders of the 20th century. You always knew where she stood. Who do you think was the great leader of the 20th century? Let's go to Evan, listening from Sarasota, Florida, on WTBN. Evan, it's your turn.
Hey, Albert, I have a little bit of an unusual one. I mean, there are a lot of great leaders that I can think of, but one of the people that I think has really had a big impact is Bill Wilson, who started the Alcoholics Anonymous movement and built into it, from his Christian background, the idea of a higher power and spirituality. And that movement has so dramatically affected so many lives around the world. And I think his leadership is pretty amazing.
Well, Evan, you did surprise me with that. I wasn't expecting Bill Wilson. If you think about lives affected, of course, you would justifiably come up with his name. The Alcoholics Anonymous movement has been of assistance to a lot of people. I have to go the further step myself, though, and say I think it has also spawned a self-help movement that has not helped a lot of people, that has transformed many other issues that should be dealt with honestly as sin rather than as some kind of addiction. There are some real issues with alcohol addiction that I think make it somewhat different than others. But I appreciate your point, just raising the fact that those who impacted human lives deserve to be on this in a very dramatic way. Bill Wilson, you made your case. You know, it is interesting that Alcoholics Anonymous is known for requiring all who are a part of that process to acknowledge a higher power. You know, the issue for me is that I have to go the whole way and make very clear that the only higher power that can make a difference is the one true and living God who has revealed himself through Jesus Christ. I'm thankful when anyone is helped. I'm thankful that the Alcoholics Anonymous program has helped many people. I just want to help them further. I want to help them all the way to the gospel and see them not only conquer the problem of alcohol, but the problem of sin. Who do you think was the great leader of the 20th century? Call us at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, this is already interesting. The lines have been lit up since we posed the question, who should we see as the great leader of the 20th century? And it is the birthday of Margaret Thatcher, Baroness Margaret Thatcher, Lady Margaret Thatcher, as she now is titled, that has occasioned this conversation. And, you know, we've already had some callers call to try to yank my chain. And, folks, I would let you on if you'd stayed on the line. If you want to make that kind of argument, I was going to let you. And we were going to learn from it. But for right now, we're going to go to Paula. She's calling from Bowie, Arizona, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Paula, who do you think was the great leader of the 20th century?
I think Mother Teresa, because of she recognized the need of help for all the poor countries in the famine and spread the gospel to all the remote areas.
Not sure about that latter part, Paula, trying to understand exactly what you're saying. Let me tell you, one of the things I admire about Mother Teresa is not only the service that she gave to the very least of those in Calcutta, and a very brave service in terms of those who are the destitute, the poorest of the poor, the outcasts, but also, I tell you, she gave an incredible model of courage when she spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast several years ago during the Clinton administration, and she very bravely addressed the issue of abortion, and turning to her audience, she said, if you do not want your babies, do not kill them, give them to us. We will care for them. That took courage. Now, you know, I have to respond to the suggestion of Mother Teresa, also as an evangelical, and say that when it comes to the preaching of the gospel, I don't know what Mother Teresa thought the gospel was. I have to assume that she was speaking as a traditional Catholic. But nonetheless, this raises the issue. How do Christians think about these things? How do evangelicals versus, say, Catholics think about these things? We need to have a consistent frame of reference. One of the things that we as Christians need to have in mind is that these persons are all sinners. Not one of them is perfect. And so all leaders, all great heroes and heroines have feet of clay. They have short tempers, and they are sometimes impatient. Some of them make atrocious decisions. And I would put forth Winston Churchill as the greatest political leader of the 20th century. But Winston Churchill made some real errors. By the way, two members of Parliament were at one time playing golf, talking about Winston Churchill, and one of his friends said as he was getting ready to putt, he said, when Winston's right, it's absolutely glorious, and he's rarely wrong. But when he's wrong, it's a beaut. And that's just the way it comes down. And that's often the way it is with leaders. So we're not saying they're perfect, but they did make an impact. I appreciate your call, Paula. Let's go to Charles calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Go right ahead, Charles.
Doctor, let's go with Billy Graham. Lives affected, souls saved, impacted lives.
Charles, I appreciate your call, and I have the honor of knowing Dr. Graham, and there is a man who made a tremendous impact using all kinds of opportunities, including the technology of mass communications, preached to more human beings than any other. And I think it'll take some time before there is an adequate evaluation and an historical perspective on the ministry of Billy Graham. Obviously, he's a man to whom a great deal of affection is directed as well. And one of the long-term issues of the 20th century is what really happened in terms of the rise of parachurch ministries in terms of the evangelical world. And one of the great questions for the 21st century is whether we can recapture not only a bold biblical statement of the gospel, but also the understanding that it is local churches that really need to practice this evangelism and to be the people of the gospel wherever they are found. Appreciate that call, Charles. Great to hear from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Let's go to Debbie calling from Seminole, Florida. It's your turn.
Thank you, and it's a blessing to have you on the air. And my favorite leader is Martin Luther King, Jr.
Debbie, thanks for calling. And go ahead and make the case for Martin Luther King, Jr. I was pretty sure someone was going to call and raise that name. I want to hear why you decided to do that.
He was very religious, he was vocal, he was articulate, he was a wonderful world leader.
Well, Debbie, I appreciate your call, and just as we're going in a break here, it's good that we raised this. And, you know, let me speak as an evangelical theologian to this, and not only that, the one who grew up in the South. I have to tell you right up front that when Martin Luther King Jr. was right, he was one of the most eloquently and courageously right men, I believe, ever to have lived on the planet. When he gave his speech on the March for Civil Rights there in Washington, standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, he articulated the cause of racial equality and of human rights probably better than any American had ever done so. But there again, you had the feet of clay issue. In terms of his private life and in other areas, even some of his political ideas, I would say, I think it falls far short of greatness. But he had a massive impact. And we as Christians are the ones who remember we're all sinners. But God uses sinners in some incredible ways. The number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Who was the greatest leader of the 20th century? Give us a call.
And when this happens, when we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
It was August 28, 1963, when Martin Luther King Jr. gave that address there on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and it became one of the most famous speeches in American history. And just listen to those words. Who could argue with what he said? That's one of the most important tasks of leadership, is to articulate something that is so right that it reaches the conscience of the people. And that happened when Martin Luther King Jr. gave that address. It took some time. There were a lot of people who in the 1960s would have said King was absolutely wrong, who now, 40 years later, are saying, you know, I agree with every word that he had to say. And that also reminds us that some historical distance is often necessary to know where true greatness really is to be found. Let's go to Dave, calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Dave, who do you think was the great leader of the 20th century?
I would absolutely have to say President Ronald Reagan. And the reason is because after the Vietnam War and the 70s crisis with fuel and hostage crisis, America had lost its identity and definitely its confidence. And along came a man who was very sure of himself, very confident of himself, and knew that America could be great again. And not only did he believe it, but through his actions and what he did, especially by taking on the evil empire and the Soviet Union, he made us believe it again, and that's where the greatness of America rose again out of the ashes.
Dave, I really appreciate your call. Let me just ask you, tell us, were you alive at the time when, or aware of President Reagan when he was in office?
I was actually going through high school. I graduated in 1986, so I watched his assassination on television, or his attempted assassination anyway, and I remember watching a lot of his speeches. And like most people, I don't think I really realized until later on how great he was, but I believe he's had a vast impact on a lot of what America is today, especially the fact that we're back to being the strong and powerful world power that we were once and we can be again.
Dave, I appreciate the call. An articulate suggestion here of Ronald Reagan, and I worked in the 1976 Ronald Reagan campaign. It's kind of my entree into really thinking seriously about politics. I got to meet the governor. I did not meet him as president, but I did meet him as governor. And I can tell you that Ronald Reagan had another one of the great qualities of leadership, and that was a personality you could simply not ignore. He lit up a room. No one had to say, "Ronald Reagan has entered the room." Everybody knew that Ronald Reagan had entered the room, not because he was arrogant and loud, but simply because he was Ronald Reagan. He was a man of conviction and of ideas, and I think what really adds to the claim of his stature is the fact that not only did he change one country, he changed many. And there are people in the Soviet Union who know that full well. You know, the outpouring of national grief last year when President Reagan died, that's a reminder to us that sometimes it does take that distance. And even people who had been his political adversaries came to sing and to testify of his significance. And that's the same thing in Britain right now. Margaret Thatcher turning 80 today. People on both sides of the aisle in the British House of Commons and British politics see her as one of the great historical figures. And to be compared to her is almost always a compliment. Let's go to David calling from Lakeland, Florida, listening on WTBN. David, it's your turn.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Dr. Mueller. I think Dwight David Eisenhower was by far one of the greatest people, leaders in the 20th century. He not only led the Allies in the invasion of Normandy and ran that campaign so that Germany was defeated, but he was a good president. And he also, as a young man, traveled across the country in the Army and found a need for an interstate highway system, and he initiated that. So he did a lot for America and for the world.
Good grasp of history there, David. You're exactly right. The interstate system is officially known, legally known in the United States as the Dwight David Eisenhower Interstate Highway System for that good reason. Another interesting thing about President Eisenhower, and not only had he been a great general, but as a president, what you had in Dwight David Eisenhower was what has been called the hidden hand presidency. And it was because there were a lot of people who thought, you know, he's not doing much. He's kind of a do-nothing president. It was only later they found out that Eisenhower really masked his political activity behind his statesmanship. And that hidden hand was that it turned out he really was actively involved in policy. He was actively pushing these agendas in Congress. He was doing all these things outside the public eye. And sometimes that's the secret of effective leadership. It's not getting credit for everything, just making all the right things happen. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, where Chris is on the line, listening on WFIA. Chris, who was the great leader of the 20th century?
Hands down, no question, Mahatma Gandhi.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, tell us why.
Well, of all of the leaders who have been quote-unquote Christian leaders, it was a Hindu in India who most lived a life like Christ, cared for the poor, turned the other cheek was his mantra. If not for the lessons of Mahatma Gandhi, I'm not sure the Martin Luther King Jr.'s movement would have had the same kind of impact. He taught us all to love one another, to be tolerant of each other's religions. He was an icon, and if you're talking about somebody who lived a Christ-like life, I would have to say Mahatma Gandhi most emulated the values that the Christ of the Bible that I read has.
Chris, I appreciate your call. You know, one of the fun things about a program like this is that I get surprised, and I'm surprised by that one. And yet I appreciate the fact that you called and made the case. You know, Mahatma Gandhi was a fascinating figure, and in many ways is more known by the movie about him than by the kind of historical biography that would be the case with other historical figures. Mahatma Gandhi was a very mixed figure, I would say, in terms of his historical impact. I'd have to disagree with you a bit there, Chris, and say that that even though he did really pioneer in many ways the idea of nonviolent protest, he was completely unprepared for what happened when violence broke out. And when you look at the granting of Indian independence, and then you look at the awful, awful, awful war that ensued, it is a reminder to me that that I have to say nonviolence is not enough. The partitioning of India and Pakistan, even now, and the war that broke out between the Hindus and the Muslims in India, well, the Indian government had no way really to deal with that. Nonviolence has to be backed up also, I would suggest, very clearly with a credible use of force to make sure that violence does not become the last word. Fascinating discussion. I have been surprised at some of the people who have been named. Also, I have to tell you, I've been surprised at some of the people who were not named. Maybe it's a generational thing. I would have thought someone would have called up and made the case for Winston Churchill. Others, perhaps even for someone like Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Regardless of your historical or even your political perspective, there are a lot of people out there that made a massive impact on the 20th century. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
I now close my military career and just fade away. An old soldier who tried to do his duty as God gave him the light to see that duty. Goodbye.
That was Douglas MacArthur, General of the Army, retiring before Congress, April 19, 1951. Very famous statement made by one of America's most famous military leaders. You know, we really didn't hear much about that. Now, we did have one who called, of course, suggested Dwight David Eisenhower as the greatest leader. We had political leaders mentioned, and I guess what surprised me, but this is fascinating. We had so many people who were primarily identified with social causes who were identified, not only Martin Luther King Jr., but someone making the suggestion about Gandhi. You know, how does a Christian think about these things? Well, number one, we have to understand that history is not only, well, as Henry Ford said, one thing after another. It's an unfolding of the providence of God. And so we have to learn to look with providential eyes to understand what is happening in history from which we should draw crucial lessons. The other thing is that we have to look at this understanding the Christian doctrine of sin, and as well as the Christian understanding of responsibility. We need to look back and say, look, every single leader has feet of clay. But that's not moral relativism to say they're all equally weak and have all suffered and committed equally atrocious sins. But it is to say that you're not going to find perfection in any human leader of any era, much less in the 20th century. You know, there's some difficult lessons here in terms of historical perspective. But one of the things we need to keep in mind is that people do make a difference. If nothing else, on the 80th birthday of Lady Margaret Thatcher, this ought to be a reminder to those of us who are thinking Christians that people really do make a difference. It makes a difference who is in the White House. It makes a difference who is on the Supreme Court. It makes a difference who is the pastor of the church. It makes a difference where you are. It should make a difference. What will be the historical legacy that you leave behind? That's a crucial issue. You know, in political terms, there have been those who for years, decades now, have been against what was called the great man theory of history, that history is primarily shaped by men, and you could also say, of course, men and women, individuals who had an inordinately great and incredible influence on history. And so when you look at the history books of the past, you have figures, Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, you just follow through, Martin Luther, you just follow through history and you look at this. Great generals and presidents and kings and leaders. Well, it's back. The great man theory of history may not be popular in many academic circles, but just go to your local bookstore and look at the bestsellers and look at the biography table, and you'll see that those who are buying the books, they really know that greatness really is important and that the influence of one individual really does matter. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about controversy over sex ed in America. It's important again. You need to know about it. I'll meet you there.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.